AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to The Press. It's our middle of the week show. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Good to have you here. Today, we're going to go over the model results for the PGA Tour event this week, the Mexico Open at Vedanta, go through a couple of surprises, go through some plays based on that model, and we'll touch a little bit on some other happenings, other potential wagering opportunities this week at the Mexico Open at Vedanta. So let's get right into the top 10 of our model. Just ran this a little while ago. And as I think I prefaced yesterday, you're not going to be all that surprised by the results. And turns out, I wasn't surprised by the result. So if you look at number one, it's Jon Rahm, as you might imagine. And I did something a little bit different this week. I mentioned this yesterday. I know I did that. That I would do the opposite field model that I do. I've come up with for the opposite field events and apply it to this one because there are so few top-ranked players in this tournament. There are three top 50 players. There are some guys on the cusp of that and that are good players. They're just not adding a whole lot of juice with being in the top 50, which is kind of the metric I consider to be an important player in a field. And knowing that, that was Rahm, Finau, maybe Alex Noren, maybe Wyndham Clark versus everybody else, That was the approach I decided to take. So some of the points are a little bit different than you would normally see here. And the margin isn't quite as big, which is going to sound kind of ridiculous because the difference between first and second is 0.32 points, which is actually quite a bit in my model. And the difference between second, which is Tony Finau, as you might imagine, and third, Alex Noren, is 0.63. So that's a ridiculous difference between second and third, and then it starts to kind of level out from there. There are only 33 players in the model with any kind of plus points. That's kind of, I won't say surprising, but we usually go a little bit deeper than that in a tournament where you get plus points. But the difference between second and third is pretty stark going from Tony Finau to Alex Noren. After Alex Noren, you have Maverick McNealy. At fourth, he has not had the best season. I thought he would have kind of come along a little bit further so far this year, but he has not done that. Andrew Putnam is fifth. Patrick Rogers is sixth. Mark Hubbard is seventh. Wyndham Clark is eighth. Ryan Gerard, probably the product of a good recent play more than anything, is ninth. Gary Woodland is tenth. And I'm, because I think Jon Rahm is probably going to win this, I'll go a little bit deeper than I normally would on this. But Ben Taylor, 11th. Cameron Percy, who tends to light up these weaker fields, is 12th. Aaron Rye, 13th. Eric Cole, 14th. Emiliano Grillo, 15th. Ben On, 16th. And I think that's pretty fair representation of the model. So the difference is between the standard model that I do with a better field versus an oppo field or a weak event is I typically try to come up with parallel tournaments in terms of field strength, quality of competition, and run that comparison to kind of find like tournaments and see how players do against that kind of level of competition and include that in the model. The problem with an opposite field event is twofold. One, running that model, there aren't that many of those tournaments. So there are very few comparison points on the schedule, and they happen somewhat randomly between Puerto Rico and Barracuda, and the Dominican Republic. And so it is very difficult to make those kinds of comparisons when you only have it three times a year. Not the best players get in. And obviously, if you're trying to compare the best players, Jon Rahm doesn't play in tournaments like this, at least on the PGA Tour. He might do it on the DP World Tour when he plays at home in Spain. But that's it. So trying to give him bonus points for competing well against this kind of competition doesn't really work. And frankly, I think if you compete well against this kind of competition, that is a bare minimum standard. I mean, less than minimum standard for the competency of a PGA Tour professional. So I took that piece out of it. Still included the qu- quality strokes gained measure, which is a multiplier of strokes gained against the average quality of your competition, and did that and brought all that together. So we're kind of taking two calculations out of this that normally would probably bump someone like Jon Rahm or Tony Finau closer to two and a half, 3 points in a really good event, and probably closer to 2 points in one of these types of events. And it drops it down, but there, again, you even still see the stark comparison between one, two, and everybody else. That all said, we talked about this yesterday, that this golf course, one, we don't have strokes gained data for it, and the lack of strokes gained data for it is a hurt, but you would only have 1 year anyhow. And I think the maybe potential pitfall here, we're going to take 1 year's worth of results and try to use that as the basis upon which to pick players, maybe in perpetuity, but obviously this one, however long we have this tournament, which may not be all that long, but having this tournament means you've got to try to figure out some way to handicap the golf course without stroke gain. Well, obviously long hitters did very well here last year, so the temptation is to go through that exercise again and go pick the longest hitters on the PGA Tour that are in the field this week. And I can understand that. That's why it drives me to someone like a Callum Tarum, who is a long hitter, but also has had a crummy season. So I think someone, I don't remember whose preview that I read, but I thought they had a good idea here in trying to look at strokes gained or proximity to the hole on longer approaches, because you're going to have some of them this week. But I also think that's applicable most weeks. I mean, especially if you're a shorter hitter. So if you want to be a longer hitter and you also are a better approach player, then I think you got to look at strokes gained off the tee and the players in the field this week and that statistic. Well, if you look at players who are in the field, you're not going to get a whole lot of help here. Some of them have... are not playing this week, and some of them have left. But think about someone like Gary Woodland, 13th in strokes gained off the tee on the PGA Tour this year. And there's some stark differences, right? I mean, MJ Defoe, pretty interesting longer shot player here at 24th on the tour in strokes gained off the tee. Just for reference point, Jon Rahm is 22nd. So I don't think you can just necessarily pigeonhole the top strokes gained guys off the tee for that reason. Sometimes longer guys lay back. Someone like Jon Rahm is great because he's really good at everything, not extremely good at one thing. So you got to consider that. But then someone like Cameron Percy shows up. He's 32nd in the tour on strokes gained off the tee. Still getting it out there. Taylor Pendrith is 36th. His odds have actually gotten longer. Emiliano Grillo, 38th, reasonable to look at. Will Gordon and Patrick Rogers, two players that I kind of like this week, 40th and 41st. Aaron Rye actually gains way more strokes off the tee than I would ever consider. He's 47th. That's not that bad for the guys who are in this field. Cody Gribble's been gaining a lot of strokes off the tee this year. So if you're trying to kind of model out the golf course specifically, even though we don't have the strokes gain data for it, and therefore it wasn't included in the model, even though it's not weighted that heavily to begin with, that's something to consider. If you're looking at approach play, I don't think you want to necessarily just look at an approach on the green, but Tony Finau is number one in that category. But if you want to look at accuracy, proximity to the hole from, let's say, 175 to 200 or greater than 200, but I'd say 175 to 200 is a really good way of looking at it. Hunt Golf Analytics looks at it, the red zone, basically. And some of the players in the field, They just have it. I mean, they're good at it. Taylor Pendrith, great from 175 to 200. Sixth on the tour in proximity to the hole. Kyle Westmoreland, 12th on the tour in that range. 16th on the tour, Augusto Nunes, who's starting to kind of, I think, figure things out a little bit. MJ Defoe, 20th on the tour in that range. Interesting guy to look at. Gained strokes off the tee. Hits his longer irons pretty close for the tour standard. You want to look at greater than 200 yards just in general. So that's all shots over 200 yards. Jon Rahm is second. I mean, that's why, another reason why he's incredible. He just keeps doing that kind of thing. Gary Woodland's fourth. Pretty good. Nothing to dislike there. Charlie Hoffman is shockingly close in proximity from shots over 200 yards, and that might be because he has so many of them. He does not have a whole lot of length in the bag, but he's sixth. Akshay Batia, seventh. Augusta Nunez, ninth. I think you could talk yourself into some of these. Matty Schmid, 11th. A lot of people are going to talk about him this week, and I think for fair reason. But a couple of names have continued to come up so far here. Woodland, Augusta Nunez, and this is research I'm doing on the fly, by the way. This isn't stuff I prepared for the show to go, oh, wow, you know, here's some guys to pick. But then you start to try to turn that over into some potential wagers this week. And I do think that there is some value here to trying to find markets without John Rahm. And you can find that in some books. Reasonable prices, right? But I did point this out yesterday, and so I want to bring it up right away before we get to those. First round leader bets. If you're going to bet Rahm this week, why not just bet him to win the first round, to be the first round leader? If he gets cut in terms of multiple leaders, okay, he's 11-1. You're going to get his win bet in one round, and then you can just be done with it. And you can reorganize your wagers. If he's ahead after round one, he's probably going to be low minus money, or plus 110 maybe at best. So I think at that point, you're getting the most you can out of him as a semi-live play, and you just walk away. And maybe you think he's going to win the whole thing, or you take some of the money and you put it on a couple of long shots live or something like that, something worth considering. But looking at the market as it stands right now, I don't see any reason to bet Rahm to win the golf tournament. It's not, I mean, he's minus 300 for a top 10. That's kind of unheard of stuff. I also do want to point this out about the tournament props. I will not play this week, but if you want to look at winning margin, it was a little bit closer than I expected last year. Think about this golf course. One of two things is going to happen. Rahm's going to win potentially in a blowout, or it's going to be really close, whoever wins. So the market has priced it this way. DraftKings has priced it this way this week, thinking those are the most likely outcomes, because one and a playoff are frequent on the PGA Tour. They are common. And four is pretty rare typically. But I think the theory of the case here, plus 300, is if you think Rahm's going to blow everybody away because he's the best in the world, you would pick that option. He could win by a zillion. And that gives you everything four and above. Two and three, not so much. And I don't know that I would bet that market this week, but I get the theory of the case here. And maybe it's worth a couple bucks on four or more and just hope John Rahm kills it. Again, another way to bet Rahm that could help you. And it may still even work if you don't win. A little bit of insurance here. If you're thinking Rahm is that much better, you're getting better odds on four strokes or more, wink, wink, John Rahm, than for him to actually win the tournament, which I think he's plus 260 right now. So maybe you think that. And yes, he could win by 0, 1, 2, or 3 as well. But I think that's a kind of another way to think about playing Rahm this week. Other guys that I want to look at based on to win the tournament, right? And not in the market without Rahm, just to win the tournament otherwise. And you start to kind of look at some of the players that make sense. Aaron Rye gained strokes off the tee quite well. Will Gordon doing pretty well in that regard. Emiliano Grillo doing pretty well in that regard. Taylor Pendrith, pretty solid in that regard. Another guy to consider. Brandon Wu came up in strokes gained off the tee. I think MJ Dufu is... I'm going to talk myself into him because he came up in a couple of the different measures that we just did in this live research. He's 80-1. That's not a bad number. He's been playing okay. I mean, he's not the best player by any stretch of the imagination, but that's really pretty reasonable, I would say. I mean, that if you're going to get someone that wins this, I think it's going to be Tony or Rahm, or maybe a shocker is my theory of the case about all of this. So if that works out to be that way, well, 80-1 is probably about in the right range. And if you look at MJ Dufu this year, look at he's 34 years old. You look at all of his stats, South African, if you didn't know that about him. He's been making money. If you look at his last seven starts on the PGA Tour, including Zurich last week, team event, I understand. But he's cashed in all seven. He's been in the top 21 in three of them. He's been in the top 30 in five of them. that's pretty good. Pretty good stuff. And it seems like he's figured something out here, because if you look at his earlier season results, not very good at all. If you look at the events he's played recently, some weaker fields. Honda, Puerto Rico, which was actually his worst finish, T64. But T29 at Corrales Punta Cana. Did pretty well at the Valspar, T19. T15 at the Valero Texas Open. T26 at New Orleans. I can work with that. If you look at his performance this year, stats-wise, his best things that he does, approaches from less than 100 yards in the rough. Fifth. Well, that's cute. Some good things in terms of strokes gained off the tee. Not so great in terms of total approach strokes gained. But if on a longer golf course, this may actually benefit him. The bad news, strokes gained putting. Awful. Truly awful. Really the thing holding him back. Because otherwise, he'd look pretty good. But he is 179th on the PGA Tour in strokes gained putting. If he just has a half-decent week, he's got a chance to win. I'm willing to take that chance. I did talk myself into Callum Tarrant. I'm going to stick with that. Akshay Bhatia, I may throw in there. I do like Mark Hubbard at 110-1 in weaker field events. Guy's been playing pretty okay lately. Michael Kim loves weak field events. Could be interesting to look at. But I think that you're almost playing too many things there. But if you're going to do it, and people have bet up Brandon Matthews this week from 350-1 to 180-1, trying to think about a guy who hits it really long. But we just looked at strokes gained off the tee statistics. I mean, it's not great. He's not that good. He's just having a rough year. But if you're thinking that having some positive vibes from last week in Zurich is enough, you may have lost your window there. I have seen a case for Matty Schmid. I do like that case, actually, at 200-1. But we're passing a whole lot of people here. Garrick Higo would make some sense if you wanted to go that path. Nikolai Højgaard, I think we mentioned him. Gary Woodland, obviously, 22-1. Gained a lot of strokes off the tee. Pretty good approach player. Not too bad. So I think that's probably the mix of it all that makes sense for the week, given not only the model, but also the theory of the golf course. I think the theory of the golf course is probably not quite as important, because we assume Jon Rahm is that much more superior than everybody, and Tony Finau is right in there in a solid second place, and he does lots of things incredibly well. So they're 1 and 2 for a reason. And then beyond that, it starts to get a little tricky. But that, I think if you're looking for a long shot play, you've got to find the identity of that guy. And Cameron Percy, who comes in 12th in the model, I know he's a little skewed because he doesn't have as many starts and he does well in weak field events, but he gains a lot of strokes off the tee. I'd be willing to take a look at him at the number that he has. I do want to get to briefly the LPGA event this week at Wilshire Country Club out in Los Angeles, the JM Eagle LA Championship. Nelly Korda, Jin Young Ko, 9-1. Lilia Vu, 10-1 with a Taya Titical. Georgia Hall is 14-1. Hyuju Kim, 16-1. Celine Boutier, who I really like this week, 20-1. Brooke Henderson showed some signs last week. I don't know if her game is where it needs to be, but 22-1 I think is a good number for a player of her caliber. Megan Kang, who gains a lot of strokes on the approach, I really, really like. I might take another shot on Allison Corpuz, who's at 45-1, and then Carlotta Segonda at 55-1 showed some good stuff at the Chevron, willing to look there, and then Jody Ewart-Chadoff at 60-1. That would probably be the plays that I would make. I get the sensation Lilia Vu or Jin Young Ko is going to win this thing, but hey, there are a couple of decent wagers that you can make in the 20s between Boutier and Henderson and Kang that I think would be worth the action. It's not that frequent, it's exceedingly rare that a long shot wins on the LPGA, and a long shot I think these days is like 50-1, but then that puts Corpuz right in there, that puts Segonda in there, that puts Jody Ewart-Chadoff in there, maybe Madeline Sagstrom, if you'd be so inclined. But last week, you also have to consider that Angel Yim was 500-1 and almost won the golf tournament. Strange things can happen. One other one I will point out is Matilda Kastrin, who had a nice start to the tournament. Maybe something to build there at 150-1. It's not been the best run for her. And she seemed like she was going in a different direction, like an upward trajectory at last year, and has kind of come back a little bit. But she was T28 at the Chevron. She was T25 at the LA Open. T48 at the Drive One. T48 at the No Cut HSBC Women's Champions. So she's been improving her game just from the start of the year, where she finished T64 at the Honda LPGA Thailand, has gotten herself back up the leaderboard against better competition. So maybe something worth looking at there for her this week, 151. If you're trying to think of a long shot that can maybe come out of nowhere, someone worth looking at there. Again, I don't think that's really the likely outcome here. I think you're going to get a better player that wins. I think it's going to be someone who's pretty short, no shorter, at least shorter than 30-1. But not bad. Not bad this year. And it's kind of unfortunate that we've got these performance stats, and I'll bring this up as somebody tries to research the LPGA, and we will probably put together a little database about this, because I've gotten a little bit frustrated about this. The LPGA does put together strokes gain data, and I think it's particularly instructive and helpful, and we gave out some tips in the last couple of weeks based on that, but that's not available publicly. You can't see that in player profiles and their performance stats and all that stuff. I'm going to try to bring some of that to light here and maybe get the data for the last few years and put it into a database so that you can research it as well. But it would be really helpful to have this more available publicly. So we'll try to work on that as a little side project here in the coming weeks. All right, that's going to do it for us today on The Press. Thank you so much for listening or watching the show. If you catch us on a podcast platform, leave a comment. Give us a 5-star review. Leave me a question. I'm happy to answer anything you've got via DM on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy, or via email, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Join Golf Newsnet for $99 a year. Got a great tool set for you each and every week. Always working on something new way to think about golf and visualize it, and trying to make it a little bit easier to make picks beyond the great model that we do each and every week. Back tomorrow, make our final cards for the week, all the events in golf, including LIV, including the LPGA, PGA Tour, the Korea Championship in South Korea on the DP World Tour. There's just lots going on, lots to pick from each and every week, trying to find good value for you here on The Press. We'll be back with another show tomorrow. Thanks for listening. We'll see you then.